This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and you know I recommend these people. I recommend their professionals to my patients and to my family members have used them, and I've been very impressed with the level of service they provide. They'll assess your needs. They'll match you with your own licensed therapist, start communicating in under 48 hours, and there's a broad range of expertise available, and it's all available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime, send a message to your counselor, and you will get timely, thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. So you never have the problem of, look, we've all been home through COVID and we've gotten used to using Zoom. Why not use that for our professional services? You don't have to sit in a waiting room. You have to go anywhere. You don't have any uncomfortable running into anybody. Just BetterHelp. They're committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. They make it easy to change if needed. More affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional professionals in all 50 states. Our podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and our listeners get a 10% discount off their first month of online therapy at betterhelp.com/Drew. That is better, HELP.com/Drew. And join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced BetterHelp professional. Welcome, everyone. Dr. Drew Podcast, blah, blah. Thank you, as always. And do check out Dr. Drew.tv for the streaming shows. Our buddy Navarro has finally made it in there. We'll check that out. And many other interesting. Trisha Paytas, Gary, stopped by. And always creates for a lot of fun. Not so much from Trisha anymore because she's in treatment and doing a lot, lot better. But it's that world that has swirled around her that is out of control. So check that out. Also, Instagram, Dr. Drew Pinsky, Twitter, @Dr. Drew. Etc. We appreciate it. And if those of you who are listening to this show do not listen to the Adam and Dr. Drew show, if you want to hear a little hot love boat talk, please do join us there. Jillian Hamilton, the Podcast One podcast, available anywhere you get your podcast, Cheating When Love Lies. Interesting topic. You can follow Jillian at jillianhamilton.online. Jillian is the creator and host, and she is looking at this topic that is actually a very complicated topic. So I'm glad you're doing it, Jillian. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Yeah, complicated, raw, taboo, all the things that, you know, people don't want to talk about.
Yeah. And so I'm guessing, how what got you into this topic, number one, and what have you learned so far? And then when after that half hour is done, we can talk about other things.
What got me into it was Corona. You know, we were all homebound, and I started writing stories about affairs. I've always wanted to write, and I just sat there with nothing to do and started writing these short stories about trysts, affairs.
And
God, I know what you're going to ask me next.
And is it any personal experience in there, or is that why you were thinking about it? Or
yes, there's personal
around people. Go ahead.
There's personal experience growing up as a child. I had experienced it in my family home. As an adult, I've experienced it in relationships. And once I was willing to talk about it, I found that people were coming out of the woodwork like, oh, this happened to me, or this happened to my mom, or this happened to my sister, my brother. So I realized how common cheating and affairs were, whether they were physical or emotional. So I started writing these short stories. People liked them. They said, oh, write another one. And then I went into the studio to record them. And people said, oh, send me another story. And before you knew it, I was like, this is kind of a podcast, you know?
Interesting. And I'm sure you get lots of interesting calls and stuff. Do you take calls?
I don't take calls yet. I just started about 3-4 weeks ago, so.
Oh, you're going to learn so much. Let's talk about the difference between physical and emotional cheating and the difference in how males and females respond to those two topics.
Yes. The difference between physical cheating and emotional cheating is just what it sounds like. Emotional cheating has really proliferated because we have this online space. So actually, people feel a greater sense of familiarity and closeness online often than they do in person. In person, you got to have date number one, and then it might be 3 weeks before you have date number two. It's hard to get together. But when you're online, you have constant access to this person. So everything from good morning, sugar, to night, night, and everything in between, you're with this person all day long. And it gives you this sense of really knowing their lifestyle, how they spend their time. You might get, you know, reactions on things that happen to them throughout the day. So emotional cheating can really be very powerful and very common because we all have the device right there with us.
How do you differentiate between emotional cheating and just a friendship?
Emotional cheating has to have a secretive component to it. This is something that your partner, your spouse doesn't know about. It's something you're hiding, and it's more than likely giving you a great sense of thrill. You know, you're looking forward to hearing from this person. When I first started this, I started talking to everybody. I mean, anyone I'd meet, I'd say, oh, so have you ever cheated? Do you know anyone who cheated? And I met this random stranger. And I told him about the podcast. And he said, oh, I have to tell you, I've been having an affair. I said, really? Would you like to talk about it? And he said, yes. I send music back and forth with this woman every night, and my wife has no idea. And by the time I get up from this table, it was dinner time, I'm going to be running back to my car to see what music she sent to me. And I live for it every single day. That's an emotional affair. I mean, he didn't tell his wife, and he was so attached to her.
Yeah, it's wild. And it is – it's like a friendship that's serving some need, right? So it goes a little further than friendship. Are you exploring what people need to do to look at or solve whatever that need might be in the primary relationship? In other words, there's some deficiency that's getting met, right?
Yes.
In the emotional affair, yeah.
I don't do any problem solving. On the podcast, especially because it is about cheating and affairs, I am completely non-judgmental. I'm here to ask questions, learn about why people cheat, learn why people have affairs, and have a conversation with them about it.
What is that deficiency commonly? Is it just as variable as relationships are variable?
So typically, women cheat to stay. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. Men cheat to stay and women cheat to leave. So men are cheating because they want this other thing, the thrill, the sex, the excitement, the validation that they may not be getting at home, but they don't want to lose their patriarchal role within the family. I don't want to abandon my kids. I don't want to abandon my wife. I need to keep the foundation together, but I also need this thrill in order to stay as the patriarch within the foundation.
But that doesn't have to be patriarchal. It would just be a way of sustaining any mutual relationship, right? Like there's a deficiency.
Yeah.
I feel unsafe or whatever. Or I have some need that's unmet. I've tried. And then I go over here and it lets me. It doesn't hurt anybody. Doesn't do it. Let's say it's just the emotional one again.
Right.
Doesn't hurt anything. He can convince himself it's a-okay. And it's helping my relationship. I can see people convincing them of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Men will say, this is helping my relationship because without this other person, without this lover, I just don't think I could handle the pressures that I have of keeping my family together. And it's interesting that you say, you know, it's emotional, it's not hurting anyone. But really, studies show that the emotional affair can be highly detrimental and even more hurtful than the physical one.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And then women, men, though, one of the reasons men can convince themselves of that is they certainly don't want their spouse engaged in an emotional affair. They'd feel bad about it.
Yeah.
But at the moment that planes are being crossed, so to speak,
that's
when men are just out of our brains. That's where murderous rage enters into the picture. And there's, you know, our evolutionary heritage is such that, you know, that in order to maintain certainty of paternity, you had to stand guard over the openings because there was no test throughout emotional. That's how other animals do it. That's how other mammals do it.
Huh.
That's just how mammals do it. Mm-hmm. They don't have any other way of being certain that they're going to invest all their resources in moving their genes forward except by being certain that they were the only individual that was engaged sexually with that receptive partner.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm not saying it's good or bad because we have lots of bad things in us from our evolutionary heritage that we should acknowledge and then deal with in a positive way.
And evolve from.
But this may be one of those things.
And then to the latter part of your question about, you know, women typically cheat to leave. This relationship, and I'm talking about heterosexual relationships at this point, women are saying, this is my ticket out. You know, I'm tired of dealing with this asshole at home, and if I can just find my ticket out, then I'm going to have this affair, and it can take me out of a really painful or hurtful marriage or partnership.
Is it necessarily leaving, or is it just being out, you know, being having some life outside of it because you're caught in it or something?
Leaving.
You know what I mean? They're going to
leave.
Yeah,
leaving.
And is it would it be accurate to say it's sort of a bullpen?
Yes.
Like I'm building, like I'm getting, how's your, they call into the bullpen
yes.
when it's time to leave. How's your arm?
Yeah.
You warm it up? You warms it up adequately? You good?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something like that. Mm-hmm.
And I guess men do that also, right?
Yes. And I'm saying, yeah. I'm speaking in broad terms.
Yeah, yeah,
not
of course. No,
broad
no, we're trying
terms,
to understand
right.
generalities. Absolutely.
Yeah, generalities,
but,
yes.
But men will leave. But men, usually when they want to leave, they leave. They don't
yeah.
need, they may build a bullpen before they leave, but they don't do anything with the bullpen, I would guess, before
yeah.
they leave?
I had one friend say to me, you know, he's a good friend, known him for 30 years. He's a guy, you know, in his 50s. And he's like, Jillian, it's very simple. Some guys can and some guys can't. And that was his response to, why do some guys leave? And he's just like, it's just a thing. Some guys have the emotional constitution to go through with it, and some are just too tied to, you know, a typically American foundational family experience where you stick it out regardless of how harmful or unfulfilling the relationship may be.
And it, let's be fair, that's not strictly speaking an American thing. That is a, you know,
well,
it goes
yeah,
back.
And I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you're probably more knowledgeable. I'm speaking, you know, these are American people I was
yeah.
talking to.
Yeah.
But I can imagine that there is some sort of global crossover with that idea, yes.
And I'm guessing – so the one thing that I see all the time clinically and, of course, on Loveland all the time was, you know, when we have bad pickers, so to speak, we keep repeating the same traumas
oh,
over.
God,
you know, if
yeah.
we had – like you said, you had a family system where there were affairs.
Yeah.
Magically you're attracted to people that engage in affairs also. Magically.
Yeah. How's
that?
Yeah.
Why is it always I pick the wrong guy? Even when I was sure it wasn't one of those guys again. Magically it's the same thing again. And you know, Dr. Freud called this repetition compulsion.
Mm.
We now know it's more of a biological phenomenon than when things are
oh, really?
Traumatizing in childhood, when we don't like it in childhood, it creates attraction to people and circumstances
huh.
that oblige us by repeating the trauma.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That makes
that's
sense.
That's just a fact. That's
mm-hmm.
just how we're wired.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm guessing you talk to lots of people that repeat things. You know, all men are fill in the blank because they keep getting attracted to
right.
those guys.
Yes. So they just recite their experience. You're totally right.
Right.
Like if you're the kind of person that tends to fall into these relationships, it's going to happen repeatedly. I just had this kid was 26 years old because I have two different types of episodes. There are episodes where I read the short story about affairs and then I have a roundtable discussion about it. So it's kind of like book club. Three
mm-hmm.
diverse people from three different backgrounds. We talk about the story. And so on this episode, I had this 26-year-old kid, you know, I'm a lot older than he is. And he said, you know, Jillian, I've been cheated on 7 different times. And I was like, you're only 26 and you've been cheated on in 7 relationships 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking it's probably consistent with what you're saying.
It's him. It's
yeah.
not them. It's him.
Yeah.
He is picking a certain kind of person.
Yes.
Or there's another corollary to this, particularly with younger people, which is they engage in certain kinds of interpersonal relating that kind of pushes people away.
Oh.
And they miss signs and things like that.
Really?
Like,
okay.
Like over clinginess and over, you know, bad boundaries or not paying attention. There's all kinds of stuff that can go on interpersonally that people can find somewhat distasteful over time.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody, again,
right.
not everybody, but,
right.
you know, you're picking that person that finds it such. And then men particularly miss signs or at least don't know how to adjust. We're
huh.
really bad at you know, it's like you're saying, most of the women that have affairs to leave,
mm-hmm.
they have always, the female partner has always told their male partner for at least 24 months that they're not happy. They're not happy. Here's what I need.
Yes.
And men are like, yeah, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine.
Yeah.
And then she leaves. And they go, I don't understand what happened. What happened?
What happened? Why didn't you tell me? I didn't know.
Right. And of course, she goes, I've been telling him for 2 years.
Exactly.
What is he talking about? Right? Isn't that what typically happens?
Yeah, definitely. And not only articulated verbally, but through your actions. You know, suddenly the person's less present or you're not having sex. I mean, that's the you asked me what I learned. One of the biggest things I've learned is that's the big red flag. Like, if you're not having sex, there's a problem. And if you're not having sex, it's more than likely that the person, even if they're not engaging in intercourse, that they're having sexual fantasies about someone else, that there's some sort of like physical sexual eroticism that's happening outside of your partnership.
And I would argue that that's a very common thing, and I agree with you.
Mm.
But that if you're not having sex, eventually somebody will have sex with,
yeah,
with
exactly.
your partner or with you have with somebody else, whatever.
Yeah.
So there's both causational from the standpoint that it's a sign of,
yes,
and also causational in the sense that you're on your way to.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm guessing there's lots of pain involved in what you're hearing about.
Yes, there's lots of pain, but also, Drew, there's lots of humor. I mean,
oh, of course, people are great. People are so funny.
People are so funny. So I was saying that I have this one type of episode where I read the short story about affairs, and then there's the roundtable discussion with people that talk about it. My other type of show is a one-on-one interview, just like what we're doing now. And I remember, all these episodes in the can. I'm like, what do I do first? What do I do first? Episode one is this guy who's like in his 50s, and he and his father were just rampant cheaters, and he has no sort of hesitation of talking about it. I hate to like be a spoiler, but he even has an episode on his honeymoon and feels totally justified about it. I'm like, what? You like did something on your honeymoon with the massage therapist, and then you go back to your honeymoon suite and what do you say? He's like, it's fine. It's no big deal. So because this had happened 20 years ago, he sees it with a different eye. You know, you're able to get away from the pain and see unbelievably some of the humor and look at it with a sense of lightheartedness because it feels so distant to the person. And although he was the cheater, his wife had substance abuse issues. And so it was very painful for him, and I'm not justifying what he did, but he validated his cheating experience because he was in such a painful situation at home.
He sounds like somebody's had a little bit of treatment of some type.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when people get treatment. They can look at their pathological behavior and laugh at it.
Mm.
That's a pretty common thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they understand that it's painful. They understand that it's pathological. But it's like, can you imagine? Look at my behavior.
And it's in his rearview mirror.
But it does bring up the interesting phenomenon of types of cheating in the sense that there are definitely, you know, some extreme circumstances psychopathologically that
mm-hmm.
set up cheating.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, narcissists and sociopaths. That's what you kind of describe there, is somebody who just doesn't care and just will do it because, hey, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
But then within that, there's also sex addicts. He sounds a little bit more on that end with some overlay of narcissism and stuff too. And these things, when they're treated, like I said, he sounds like he had some treatment. The behaviors settle down. They usually stop, in fact, if somebody's properly treated.
Well, he's funny because he said, yeah, I don't do this anymore. And I said, well, why do you think you've changed? He's like, well, I'm pushing 60. I can't. You know, he's like, I just can't perform like I used to. And so in his mind, he can't. Sorry.
And I wonder, I would ask him pointedly about, how he doesn't get attracted to other addicts and alcoholics. I think he might be too, by the way. There's sort of an addict quality to all this.
Mm.
And whether he's had any recovery and whether he's had any treatment. And that's usually the case because people that engage in these behaviors are so destructive. Oh, my God. They bring just destruction
yes.
down
yeah.
on everybody.
Yeah.
And they feel lots of guilt and shame about it when they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, unless they're completely psychopathic and
mm-hmm.
they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
That does happen too.
Yeah, there's a lot of guilt and shame.
Go ahead.
No, there's a lot of guilt and shame when you get caught. But as long as you're doing it and not getting caught, you're living in a thrill, you're living in a fantasy, and you just feel like you're going to get away with it.
I'm not sure that's true because it's so close to drug addiction that, you know, of course they keep using and they don't worry about it when they're using, but they have deep guilt and shame. It's just not on the surface until
they get caught. Oh, it's internalized. Okay.
And they often, you know, are able to connect the dots to the person they hated in their childhood who was engaged in the same behavior.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's often sort of there, and that's one of the reasons that it fuels the guilt and shame.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. It's just, you know, we're very, very predictable as human beings. It's just like, you know, any other primate system. You can just look at it. There's a lot of variations on the scene. We're complicated socially, but you can easily sort of understand what we're up to if you study it deeply. You're gonna get exposed to all of this.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that everyone who's cheated is psychopathological. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about this kind of pattern you were just talking about, where it's extreme. Then you know you've got something on your hands. In terms of the fact that something like – is it as high as 50% of people cheat? Is that about the number?
Yeah.
In marriages?
Yes.
Right?
Even
and so
more. And that number is difficult because how do you define cheating? So it's really hard. I'm skeptical about the numbers in that regard because –
I think it's too low or too high?
I think it's too low.
Yeah, because emotional cheating, if you throw that in there, it gets
a little
higher,
right? That in there, you know, the story that I gave you earlier, the guy with the song, is he cheating?
Let's talk a little deeper about that.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. almost like has anybody who's been married for a long period of time had a friendship where they think to themselves, oh, I don't think my life, my husband would like this. But you've got to feel that.
Yes.
And yet you kind of file it under, oh, well, you know, and that's got to be close to everybody.
Well,
right?
That's my point. And I think that's why I have, you know, quite a few guests and betrayed partners and cheaters willing to speak because they're saying it's just so prevalent. I see it in my office. I see it, you know, when people were going to the office and definitely online. I mean, there are entire communities of people sharing information, you know, share whether it's on a personal level, a business level. You have so much access to other people and you
I'm starting to wonder if it's not maybe good. In the sense that people need friendships and they need relationships outside of their primary relationship. They just can't – they have to hold a very careful boundary with it.
Exactly.
And I'm not sure people are used to doing that or understanding where the boundaries need to be.
Exactly, because it only takes one of the two people to give a little, you know, sexy comment, you know, hey, you look really hot on the Zoom or whatever it could be. And then suddenly the relationship has turned the corner. You know,
you're in.
Yeah. Do you go back and tell your wife, hey, the guy that I was talking, you know, Zooming with told me how hot I looked? No, you're going to hide it. And suddenly then you hide the next thing that she says or he says. And suddenly you have this whole sort of like secret relationship going on, and it becomes a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope. Do you have advice for people that are in that kind of slippery place and how to keep it in a healthier place where it is really just a friendship that's kind of intimate and doesn't diminish your primary relationship?
No.
Is there a way to hold that boundary? Or do you have to go cold turkey?
I don't have advice and I don't give advice because, I would send them to you because, you know, you have the expertise to know. I'm not really positioned to tell someone, you know, who'd be in that vulnerable position, give them advice about their relationship. I mean, that's a very hefty load to carry.
So
I'm really ask questions.
Yeah, I get it. And that's an important function. I totally understand. And that's a boundary. And that's good that you're maintaining that boundary.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, I think what I would tell people is take a good look at your primary relationship and understand why you have emotional needs and whether you can get those emotional needs met from your spouse or your partner. And if you can't, you know, why is that? And what do you want to do with that? And can it be, you know, a lot of things can't be treated, right? They just can't. That's just the nature of the two people involved. And then if you feel that you have to have a friendship outside, man, you got to make sure that if that friendship gets into the sexual territory, you can't let it keep going there. You got to pull it back. You have to.
But what
otherwise,
do you do?
You're done.
What do you
it's
do
over.
When it,
you're going to go? You're going to go that way.
But what do you do when it feels good? You know, it's nice to have someone complimenting.
That's the point.
Me.
You can't. You can't indulge yourself if you want to sustain that primary relationship. Mm-hmm. If you start indulging yourself,
literature
is very clear on this. You diminish the primary intimacy by engaging in intimacies elsewhere. It has repercussions. It just does. Mm-hmm. And if you really, you know, we all stand up at the altar and make these lofty commitments. If you really want to live up to those commitments, you have to hold the barrier, hold the line somewhere, because it will continue to have effects. And if it's stuff you have to come clean about, you don't know. It's very scary. Your partner may feel betrayed and not be able to trust you ever again.
Exactly.
Or the partner may be able to rebuild that trust over time and forgive you. But it's scary territory of the unknown.
Yes.
Right?
And if the primary relationship is damaged or is in a problematic state, you know, the person's not going to be apt to want to talk to their partner, right? The relationship's already broken. So now do I walk and say, oh, let me tell you about this wonderful guy that I go have smoothies with after yoga practice and how he thinks I'm hot.
Yeah.
You know, you're just not – the relationship can't sustain that type of honesty.
And also, you know, whatever if you haven't had your sort of attraction systems addressed, meaning your traumas, you're going to get attracted to something problematic as well.
I mean, so
jumping ship, do you have stories about people who do go ahead with these relationships and leave their primary relationship and lo and behold, it's the same thing all over again?
Yes. I have stories. A guy, he, you know, married, has kids, and his mistress lived around the corner. And he got caught and ended up leaving the wife and kids and literally moved around the corner with the new family.
And how'd that work out?
Very contentious, you know, very hostile, very contentious. You know, the primary wife, you know, the first wife is devastated. You know, how do you get past that? And you feel like it's happening in my own backyard. I probably saw this woman walking the dog. And I do also want to acknowledge that the rate at which women cheat has really grown and progressed. Women cheat. I think that we tend to think the men are cheating. The men, you know, particularly in the heterosexual community, the men are bad. They have a middle-age crisis. They're cheating. The women are cheating. They're in the workplace. We're working. We're out there. We have access to men. You know, women have desires. Women's sexuality has been, you know, awakened, you know, in these past several decades. And women do cheat.
And I think you were saying, and it is the case, that some men cheat because they can. And they feel like they can get away with it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that category has increased amongst women as well.
Yes. I can do it. I have a job. I have the access. Access is a big, big component in cheating. If you have the time and the access to get to someone else and they show interest in you, the door has just opened wide, wide open.
That's interesting. Do you have any specific stories about that?
You know, online, the emotional affairs, I was talking to a woman whose husband was divorcing her. He had an affair. He had this mistress, and he would buy her the bags and the shoes and the trips and the, you know, was spoiled this mistress. She found out, she was devastated. And I said to her, you know, I understand what happened with your husband, but have you ever done anything, maybe not as egregious, maybe not as expansive as buying gifts and trips, but have you done anything? And she went on to tell me the story about how she met this guy in a plane and he was really hot and sexy. And as I'm listening to her, I'm thinking, I know exactly where this is going. Long story short, she ends up like exchanging numbers with the guy. They start having secret email communications. And I'm like, did you tell your husband? Well, no, it wasn't a big deal. And I'm thinking, it was a big deal. I mean, your husband may be at a much, much more extreme level, but you're still having a secret relationship that's fulfilling your sort of like erotic emotional fantasies, and you're not telling your husband. So are you not involved in an affair as well? She never answered the question. But I think that many would argue it was. It would be hurtful to the husband had he found out.
Right. And so that's sort of the threshold, right? Is that it would be your spouse wouldn't like it. It'd be hurtful to the spouse.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm still not convinced that threshold, if you can pull back from it, it's still not okay to have something, whatever, you know, that you enjoy and it makes you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
I think as a partner, you sort of want your partner to have that as long as you could trust that they could hold the boundary. But it's playing with fire, right?
It's playing with fire. You know, I was just editing an interview that I did with some polyamorists. You know, polyamory being consensual multiple relationships. So I'm married to you and then we have a lover, but then maybe I also have another lover. You know, it's very complex series of emotional, physical relationships. And, you know, they were talking about how being open, honest, and consensual made the difference, you know, and how young people today are more willing to have these kinds of relationships.
Talk to those people in 10 years. I promise you it'll be a catastrophe. There are armies of people, professionals, just trying to get two people to have a healthy relationship.
Right,
you bring in three, it doesn't get twice as complicated. It gets cubed as complicated. And then you're doing more. It inevitably, unpredictable emotions develop and chaos ensues. Without exception. It just is. Now, people want to stay with that. That's on them. It's fine with me. But I'm telling you, the amount of – people need simple lives. That's one thing that's an absolute truism in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
People need simple lives. When you add complexity, you end up in pain and all kinds of other stuff. That's where all the addictions come in and everything else as you try to manage that pain.
Well, one of the things that the male polyamorous said was he said, I like exactly what you're saying, Drew. I like that I have incredibly high highs, the ecstasy of like seeing my wife with other men and my girlfriend, you know, so complex. I love the ecstasy, but I also really value the lowest low and how I can go from feeling so upset. Maybe one time my lover is with her husband and it really upsets me and I see them being together and it's so low and I feel so awful. But the next night I can be with her and another guy and it brings me to this high. So it's like living off of these extremes. And
You ever talk to a drug addict?
Well, yeah.
That's what they talk like. That's what they talk about.
It's
where it goes. These things progress. They don't remain stable.
Mm-hmm.
They progress. And that's the part that everybody misses. And then all their rhetoric is all just so much nonsense. Like, yeah, do whatever you want. You don't have to justify it to anybody. Do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to talk to people that have worked with people that have, who over time see what happens with all this, we're happy to help. In the meantime, do what you want.
Well, one thing I did observe was in that particular interview that one partner had increasingly deep and hardened – I shouldn't say hardened, but very, very deep emotional feelings for the other that, in my opinion, the other didn't share. So
correct.
That's
– there's all kinds of stuff like that
yes.
that happens.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, because they have that – boundary issue with it's kind of a codependency.
Yeah.
They will take that partner on any terms, no matter how abusive or problematic or painful the behaviors. They'll take them on any terms.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of abandonment stuff going on in folks like that. A lot of abandonment. You got to ask, you know, your family of origin, what happened there? Anyway, you know, our wiring gets set up in childhood, and we end up spending much of our life managing that wiring in our interpersonal lives. That's where that's where it always comes to bear, is in our relationship with other humans. Talk about the gay community a little bit. Any insights there? Have you seen anything? It's because a different set of issues, and it can be a little more. It's more interesting. Not more interesting. It has interesting differences. Let's put it that way.
Yes. So I am hoping to have much more, you know, data and experiences with the trans community, the gay community. And as I said, the show just started. So we're, you know, getting more of these types of guests and stories. But I did have a young gay gentleman on. This was the one I was talking about earlier, that he had been in 7 relationships and had been cheated on 7 times. And I said to him, okay, well, there's this stereotype that we hear about, you know, the gay community being much more sexually active and that there's more cheating. I said, is it a stereotype? Is it true? You know, how would you respond to that? And his point of view as a young gay male was, you know, his experience is that he feels like it's the same in the heterosexual community and the homosexual community. He's like, All my guy friends are cheating on all their girlfriends, just like I've been cheated on 7 times.
Well, you've heard me talk about this before, which is that insurance doesn't always cover the cost of an emergency medical flight. Even with comprehensive coverage, you can still get hit with a substantial deductible or copay. Protect your family and your finances with an Air Medcare Network membership. If an emergency arises, the expense of an air medical transport is completely covered when flown by an AMCN provider. Membership costs as little as $85 a year and covers your entire household every day, even when you're away from home. That's just pennies a day. We all know that the unexpected can happen, and AMCN membership is protection no family should be without. And for a limited time, as a Dr. Drew podcast listener, you will get up to a $50 e-gift card when you join. Simply visit airmedcarenetwork.com/Drew and use offer code Drew. Marie wasn't getting enough sleep. Every night she struggled with poor sleep and restless legs, but then she made a small change. 1 month later, everything was better. All because she started taking Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers, the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium. Marie left a 5-star review saying, quote, "I'd give this 100 stars if I could. Within 1 month of use, I went from daily struggles with restless legs, constipation, and poor sleep to no struggles with any of that. I know it sounds dramatic and far-fetched, but it's true. And Marie is not the only one getting better sleep after taking Magnesium Breakthrough." Amanda says, quote, "I fall asleep much faster and stay asleep now until normal waking hours. You have a customer for life." And Cross says, quote, "On the first night of taking Magnesium Breakthrough, my deep sleep jumped up to 2 hours, which has been the highest reading so far from my Oura Ring." Listen, if you're having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, one of the best things you can possibly do is to start getting enough magnesium. But please do not run to the store to buy the first magnesium supplement you find. Most magnesium supplements use only the 2 cheapest synthetic forms. And since they're not full spectrum, they won't fix your magnesium deficiency or help you sleep better. There are actually 7 unique forms of magnesium, and you must get all of them if you want to experience its calming sleep-enhancing effects. That's why we recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers. Simply take 2 capsules before you go to bed, and you'll be amazed how much better you sleep and how much more rested you feel when you wake up. For an exclusive offer for my listeners, go to magbreakthrough.com/Drew. Use the code DrDrew10 to save 10% when you try Magnesium Breakthrough. And oh, one more thing. For a limited time, Bioptimizers is also giving away free bottles of their best-selling P3OM and Massozymes with select purchases. Amazing. So go to magbreakthrough.com/Drew right now to get your exclusive 10% discount, plus the chance to get more than $50 worth of supplements for free. Well, we all know the importance of eating healthy, but you don't always have time or access. Organifi Superfood Blends makes it easy and enjoyable to add more variety and nutrition to your day. Delicious organic powders you can add to water, stir with a spoon, and enjoy anytime for more better access to good nutrition. If you are, you know, one of these people that doesn't have time to go to the store, I mean, this is a way to get that nutrition. Great way to jumpstart your morning, energize your afternoon. They've got amazing organic foods. So check out Organifi's line of superfood blends. Go to Organifi.com/Dr. Drew. That is Organifi.com/Dr. Drew. Use code Dr. Drew at checkout for 20% off your order. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. They can assess your needs. They can match you with your own licensed therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. And of course, this isn't a crisis line. It's not a self-help line. Professional counseling done securely online. They have a broad range of expertise, and the service is available worldwide. Log into your account anytime, send a message to your counselor. You will get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly videos and none of the uncomfortable, or phone sessions for that matter, but none of the uncomfortable waiting in a waiting room or running into people. And again, we're also accustomed now to using Zoom. This is a great way to access services and take better care of ourselves. They are committed at BetterHelp to facilitating matches. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling. It's free to change counselors if needed, and financial aid is available. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Our podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and our listeners get 10% off their first month of online therapy at betterhelp.com/Drew. Visit BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Drew, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced BetterHelp counselor. Well, talk to him as he gets older, because all my gay patients and friends struggle with the fact that there is the openness of the gay community in terms of their sexuality makes it more difficult, they will tell you, to have a sustained monogamous intimate relationship. Stand in front of the any bookstore on the section on gay relationships, and all you will see, how to have a monogamous partner, how to have an intimate partner, how to have a relationship, because it is a specifically challenging topic for the community. Not that people don't do it. They do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've seen gay marriage to have contributed in a positive way to that, because when somebody makes a commitment, they make a commitment. You know
right.
what I mean?
Absolutely.
Even though there's a slight difference in the social conduct, a commitment is a commitment, and many men want to live up to that commitment, have that intimate partner, and will acknowledge the same thing we're talking about here, that cheating diminishes the primary intimacy.
Yes.
It affects it.
Well, what I definitely don't want to do on the show is fall into those stereotypes, you know, like that heterosexual men cheat more than women, because they really don't. You know, the statistics show it's like 50-50, you know, it's the same. I don't know as much about the homosexual community, but I didn't want to fall into a stereotype of, oh, yeah, well, they're all sleeping with each other.
Just look at the data.
Okay.
Just the data is the data.
Okay.
And the data can change over time.
Right.
You know what I mean? The data is the data.
Mm-hmm.
And I think – I'm just thinking about the male-female thing. I think that data has changed, as you pointed out, where the women are more likely to engage in available sexual contact the way men would. So that's sort of equalizing.
Right. I like how you say
available.
I think that
there's a difference still in the sense that a few men act out a lot more than other men. And I'm not sure there's the same thing amongst women so much. You know what I mean? There's certain character profiles and sex addiction and stuff like that that's more common in men that predisposes to that behavior.
To more cheating.
Yeah, the behavior. I mean, for instance, you know, narcissism and sociopathy, that's male.
Mm-hmm.
Those are male, much more common in male population now.
Right.
Not that it won't change over time. Now,
sure.
And sex addiction too, more common. But women come into sex addiction through relationship addiction. Men come into sex addiction through sex.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting distinction. Yeah, I totally support that. Yes.
Not that there aren't straight sex addicted women, but they tend to be more
fewer.
On the drug addict side of things.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, these are very, 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 very common conditions. These are, tens of millions of people have these conditions.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to be talking to them for sure.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be judged for it any more than I judge a drug addict when they're using. It's just it's a symptom complex. It's do you want to change it or don't you? Is my question. Always you cool with this for now, or do you want to change it? It's working or not. But I will tell you that, you know, everyone that works in these fields will ultimately try to get people to be simpler. Much like your 60-year-old guy that had calmed down.
Right.
It's just you need a simpler life to, frankly, you know, by the way, in all these behaviors, lots of medical issues and shortened lifespan and all that stuff starts to get into the issues as well.
Yeah. I had one roundtable guest say that. He was, you know, we were talking about this very complex, you know, lover relationship, and the guy had several mistresses. And I should talk more about some of the women too that have their several lovers. And he was like, listen, these people are way too complex. Exactly what you're saying, Drew. These people are too complex. They need to just focus on their primary relationship, work on the primary relationship, and pull the primary relationship together. And then they won't have all of these health issues and stress and high blood pressure and things that can contribute to, you know, a disfavorable medical condition, because you're so anxiety ridden and having to hide.
And to be fair, it's not just anxiety. It's risk taking that leads to injuries.
Mm-hmm.
It's infectious diseases. It's being so wound up in all this bullshit that you're not taking care of your medical needs or your physical health. And, you know, it starts to spiral in the wrong direction. And the even more common thing is you start to use substances to manage all this, and then the substances have their impact. And it's literally shortened the lifespan. I mean, if you want to live a longer life, keep it simple, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better for child rearing. It's much clearly better for child rearing. Kids that come up in these environments repeat the behaviors, everybody. It's a gift that keeps on giving. Trauma results in repetition. And, it's just the way it is. And if you can just hold your shit together until they're 18.
And then you go crazy.
At least until they're 12. Right. It makes a huge difference.
Go crazy.
So,
yeah.
So let's see. What else did I want to chat about? I'm interested in the LGBTQ, et cetera,
yes,
alphabet, then what you get into there, because some of that is not well explored elsewhere. I have lots of questions for the trans community, and I don't have a lot of experience there. And
as do I. Like, I'm in the same position.
Yeah, like I don't understand, you know, preferences and, you know, how that works for the, for I just had dinner with Caitlyn Jenner last night, and we're kind of developing a friendship, and I'm tempted to ask her some of this stuff because she's very charming, very forthcoming, very smart. And I have a feeling one day we'll have those conversations.
I know, but I guess sometimes I'm a little shy about it. I'm thinking, well, shouldn't I know this? You know, aren't I woke? Shouldn't I have the answers to these communities that are outside my own? But I have to just dive in, you know, 2 feet first, because I really do want to know. And that's what, you know.
Well, it's what you got to realize. It's not as common, you know, we're not interacting that way as commonly as we would like to be, because these aren't super, super common phenomenon in that we're, you know, chatting with them as much as you'd be chatting with other populations. But I do urge everybody to ask questions. You want to be an ally, right? You want to be an ally? How else can you be an ally except really understanding what they're dealing with and what other people's experiences are?
And I'm truly curious. I mean, I really want to know. So it's being an ally. It's being curious. It's being understanding. It's understanding the world around us, you know.
Hey, let me mention, my daughter and I read a book that's coming out right around now, right?
Okay.
It'll be right around now, Gary?
It might even be available for a few weeks here.
It's called It Doesn't Have to Be Awkward, and we're designed it. Yeah, we designed it, these kinds of topics, and my daughter's an excellent writer and did a great job with this, and she's way more woke than I am, which is why I needed somebody like her in with me. I'm still, you know, burdened by my own upbringing and place in history and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I'm well aware of it, and I want to do better. And we need new language, by the way, for that. We use inflammatory language, and it's just a fact. And we all it's our job to, like, hey, pay attention is all we're asking. And it's called Doesn't Have to Be Awkward, but we really designed it for sort of like 15 to 19 year olds and their parents to talk, be able to talk about these issues, the landscape for these issues, a way to talk about it. And as I'm thinking about talking to Caitlin, you know, I would apply those principles in talking to her. Just like, how can I be an ally? How can I understand better? How can I be less restricted by my own experience and my own upbringing and place in history and, you know, all that? That's you know, I don't know how you feel about this. We're getting into something here I did not expect. But
tell me.
But I've said this many times on the Adam and Drew show, but Frederick Douglass really, really made the scales fall from my eyes reading his words. Those of you who don't know, you must know.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great American from the pre and post Civil War era.
Yes.
An African American former slave. Brilliant orator, like crazy. His orations are sort of like they're poetry, they're biblical, they're unbelievable. And it made the scales fall from my eyes seeing his perspective. And he used the word white supremacy. He'd used that word really as essentially describing what we're talking about, which is not seeing other people's point of view.
Yes.
And I'm happy to use that term. Unfortunately, people bristle at that term because it means skinheads and means all kinds of crazy things. And so either we need to get over that.
Or develop language that addresses what it is we're talking about.
Or address what it
is. Expanding the optics on how we view the population at large. You know, really
it's just paying
seeing
attention,
all people.
Everybody. It's all it is. Pay attention. It's all you got to do. And care. You got to care. And maybe we need to do a little better on that.
Yes. So. Yes. And I hope that on, you know, Cheating When Love Lies, people come away thinking that they've learned something, they've been helped, they feel less guilt and shame because you realize you're not alone. Oh, you know what? I kind of felt that way about this guy at my office, or I had an emotional affair and I'm not the only one. Or, you know, I'm thinking about having an affair and I don't know what to do. What will the repercussions be? You hear these stories from people who share what happened to them. And you're right. Oftentimes, it doesn't end so well.
And Jillian,
yes.
I would argue that what you're doing is a public health
a
message. And let me explain why. And we should have done this during COVID. And the fact that we didn't is absolutely breathtaking to me, which is that people learn from narratives about relatable people. Like they're like me.
Yes.
And the consequences of their choices. When I went to medical school, we learn from cases. It's experiential learning.
Mm-hmm.
Humans learn efficiently from cases, number one. And number two, people don't adjust their behavior with information. We can learn all kinds. We learned this during the HIV and AIDS epidemic. We had everybody just juiced up on the information.
Right.
And they still didn't change their behavior until we did what you're doing. We – like Loveline was that. We listened to little pieces and the consequences.
Yes.
And somebody explained it. And you're doing the same thing. And it's a topic that I think is extremely relevant for now. And please do explore – the repercussions of their choices throughout their family systems and in whoever else are affected by their choices, because that will then help the people that are listening to accommodate their own decision making and to be in a better position to make healthy choices one way or the other. It's up to them.
Well, as you were saying at the beginning, you know, do I have listener call-ins and stuff? As we progress, I do know the ending to some of these stories I started with. Remember, I started this a year ago. So now people are having affairs or involved in affairs. Now it's a year later. So I do know what happened. And in most cases, it doesn't end so well.
It doesn't end so well. Just tell
not always. Not always, but more often than not, there is some sort of, you know, negative consequence, whether it's for the couple or for the children or for the family or for
Yes. That's right. And let people draw from those stories information that they can then adapt to their own decision making and make their own choices. But,
yes.
But I trust me, it has a dramatic effect on people's behavior. Which is what, you know, what from a public health standpoint we want to do. Again, why we didn't do this when COVID, it just fucking blows my mind.
But I did. I started in COVID. I just didn't get on the air till now.
But I mean that we didn't. We should be telling stories.
Yes.
About people who didn't get a vaccine and just not, oh my God, they're terrible. Just like, hey, what happened when you didn't take the vaccine? Why did you make that choice?
Yeah.
And you didn't take it? Oh my God. And you didn't end up hurt, but oh my God, your husband ended up in the ICU. Ugh, doesn't seem like it was such a good choice, was it? That's it. Don't pass judgment. And then people will draw their own conclusion.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
In some of my stories, sometimes there are favorable endings. You know, I got away from this woman. She was a horrible, wretched narcissist. Hate her, got away from her, and now I'm happy and I have a new wife and children with somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, those stories exist as well. But you're totally right. I, and because I'm not like you, an expert or a psychologist, I just want to hear the story, not judge you, not give you advice. We're just going to have a conversation about what happened to you.
Well, I think it's great, and I thank you for doing it. And
I'm sure
it will. There's endless material there.
Oh,
and it is the source of most drama. Is these kinds of relationships
where
drama, you know, is the core issue in just about every drama you can ever watch. So, again, it is Jillian Hamilton, Jillian Hamilton.online. Cheating When Love Lies, available podcast one, anywhere else you get your podcast. Jillian, thanks for spending a little time with me.
Thank you so much. It was great. I had a great time.
Good luck with the podcast.
Thank you.
See y'all later.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.